from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has reportedly told members to clear their weekend schedules, suggesting he lacks support for the temporary spending bill passed by the House last night, and that a government shutdown tonight is more likely. We get the latest on the negotiations and how California is preparing. Then at 9:30, more than 100,000 people are expected to turn out across the Bay Area tomorrow for women's marches, with a focus this year on getting more women to seek public office or other leadership roles. Are you planning to march? Tell us why or why not. That's all next on Forum. We'll get started after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. While the House may have passed a temporary spending bill last night to keep the government running through February 16th, but the odds of a government shutdown have gone up as GOP Senate leaders struggle to get enough votes to support it. Democrats and some Republicans have vowed to block the bill because it does not include protections for so-called Dreamers who arrived in the U.S. illegally as children. Joining us with analysis and the latest are Molly Reynolds. She's a fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Good morning, Molly Reynolds.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thanks for being here. We've also got John Bresnahan with us. He's Congressional Bureau Chief for Politico. And John Bresnahan, as I understand it, you've been camped out at the Hill for a while.
I have for the last 23 years.
So. Well, from your vantage point, where is the momentum right now, toward or away from a government shutdown?
Definitely toward a shutdown. I mean, officially, the funding runs out at the end of the day, end of Friday. So right now the House is finished with their work for the week. They're scheduled to go on recess next week. They haven't technically adjourned, but there's no vote scheduled. The Senate, they're talking, but as of right now, there's not a lot of movement. So, you know, where we stand a couple hours out is, it looks like there's going to be a shutdown.
Well, you reported that House Majority Leader California's Kevin McCarthy said GOP leaders will send the House home this weekend. What are the implications of that?
Well, their position is they passed a funding resolution to keep the government open until February 16th, including funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, 6 years of funding for that program. For House Republicans, they feel like they've done their job. Senate Democrats don't accept this and refuse to allow it to move forward in the Senate, then the shutdown is on their head. You know, the House has done its job, and they're not, going to negotiate. They've approved a short-term funding bill, and it's this one. This is it. So take it or leave it.
So basically, if the Senate comes up with something different, they won't be there to vote on it.
Well, technically, they're not adjourned. They're in recess of the call of the chair. For the moment, they're telling members to kind of stick around. There may be some procedural votes. So I think they're waiting to see right now if Senate Democrats buckle and look to cut a deal or not. So, I mean, they're kind of watching and waiting, but their public position is we've done our job. We're not negotiating. This is it. If Senate Democrats want to speak to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell or President Trump and say this is what we would accept to allow the spending bill to move forward, then that's it. But the House Republicans are, kind of sitting them. They don't want to look like they're negotiating with themselves. Mm-hmm. So they voted. They passed it. The Democrats didn't think they could do it. They did it. And that's it for them.
Well, John Bresnahan, who will be blamed for a government shutdown?
Well, that's, generally it's the party that causes the shutdown. In this case, it would be Senate Democrats filibustering a resolution to fund the government, refusing to allow it to go forward on a final vote. But the Republicans control all the levers of power in Washington. They control the House, they control the Senate, they control the White House. So, there is polling that shows that the Republicans would be blamed for the shutdown. So I think if you listen to the Republicans, it's very clear that they are fighting over this. This is over the issue of Dreamers, the 700,000 Dreamers, and whether to be open to deportation. the Republicans are saying this is about illegal immigration. If you listen to Mitch McConnell carefully, he kept saying it last night. He said it again today. This is Democrats are defending illegal immigration. So they think, the Republicans, this is their message. As far as the Democrats are concerned, they're saying, look, we are, you know, there's 700,000 people here. We're trying to deal with a crisis. You know, these are Americans in everything but name only. So we're trying to see, get this resolved. They're also saying there's huge differences on government funding. You know, the Republicans want to spend all this money on the Pentagon while we want to go to domestic priorities. So there are big ideological issues that they're fighting over.
Well, John Bresnahan, before I let you go, just tell us how much the president has been a factor in all of this.
Well, there was the now infamous meeting in the Oval Office last week where the senators thought they had a bipartisan deal on the Dreamers, and Trump used the racist terms to describe immigrants from Haiti and Africa and less developed countries. So, I mean, I think there's directly at the moment the president is not directly the cause of this, but I think, clearly the Democrats loathe Trump, and the base loathes Trump. I should say that members find him an unreliable partner, Democratic members. They don't, if you listen to Senate Minority Chuck Schumer, he keeps saying, what does the president want on an immigration deal? Tell us exactly what you want. We know he wants a border wall, but we don't know anything beyond that. He's just trying to, he's not being a good partner and not negotiating. So, I think that, they feel like Trump is unpopular, his poll ratings are low, despite a good economy, despite a tax cut. They think that they can win this politically, that they can force Republicans to cut a deal with, and the Republicans don't want to do it. So we'll see. It's good. I think right now I would say there'll be a shutdown, barring some last-minute miracle, and both sides are going to see who's paying the price before, that they're going to have to, figure out who's suffering more before they come to the table and deal.
John Bresnahan, Congressional Bureau Chief for Politico, thanks for joining us. And hopefully you'll get some kind of a reprieve before midnight tonight. Molly Reynolds with the Brookings Institution, can you just remind us what's in the House bill that passed last night?
Sure. So the House bill that passed last night would keep the government open, would keep the government funded through the middle of February. And it would also provide a 6-year reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program, which is, historically a bipartisan, popular initiative that Republicans and Democrats have both supported in the past. And that expired at the end of September. And states are really beginning to run out of money to keep kids insured under that program. So there's a lot of pressure to act on that in addition to, keeping the government open and avoiding a shutdown.
Right. And if my count is correct, this would be the fifth temporary spending bill that has been proposed since September.
It's either the fourth or the fifth, but once we sort of get that high, the exact number doesn't matter and is, I think, really should just be taken as a symptom of the degree to which Congress has really struggled both this year and in recent years with getting their appropriations, their spending bill work done on time and in a way that allows members to really deliberate over some really important questions.
Well, I bring it up just because one of the arguments has been that we just don't want to keep governing by these short-term plans and just wind up in the same place a month later. I'm going to invite our listeners to join the conversation. This is a half-hour segment, and I want to get your reaction to all of this that's going on. Do you support the Democrats to fight on in this way? Are you frustrated with this whole process? Who do you blame for this impasse? Call 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786 with your questions or comments. You can also post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. And you can post comments on Facebook and Twitter. We're joined now by H.D. Palmer. He's Deputy Director of External Affairs for the California Department of Finance. Hi, H.D. Palmer.
Good morning, Mina. How are you?
I'm well. So how worried are you in Sacramento that there will be a government shutdown, and how are you preparing?
Well, first, I'm worried like you for John. Before I came home to California, I worked on Capitol Hill for 12 years, and I've lived through a couple of these shutdowns briefly at that time. But I can tell you that what John's going through, I've been through too. It's long hours, little sleep, short tempers, and high drama.
Mm-hmm.
As for preparing here, we stand ready to work with state agencies if we get into a protracted situation where we have a shutdown that goes on for several weeks, which we haven't had since 2013, the last shutdown that we had in October of 2013.
That one lasted
about,
a little over 2 weeks.
Lasted for about 16 days.
Yeah.
We hope that cooler heads will prevail, that we won't get into a protracted situation like this. In terms of the immediate impacts, if we get to a shutdown situation at the end of today and over the weekend, the immediate impact will be felt by some of the roughly 252,000 Californians who are employed by the federal government. And part of that will be determined by whether or not their job is categorized in the federal terms as accepted versus not accepted, by which whether or not they are subject to furlough or not. We at the Department of Finance here in Sacramento can't issue any type of a blanket statement on that. That's something that each individual federal worker would have to check with his or her supervisor. In terms of basic services, most of the main services will continue. The mail will still be delivered by the Postal Service. Social Security checks will still be cut. VA hospitals will still be open. And if you're traveling, whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, you're still going to have to wait into a TSA line before you get on a plane. The security will still be running, as will federal air traffic control. Where we get into questionable issues in terms of state programs is if we get into a protracted shutdown scenario where we've got programs that may not have authorization to go forward, that rely on furloughed employees to administer those programs that are jointly administered between the federal and state government. If certain programs have or don't have so-called carryover funds, in other words, federal funds sitting in their bank account from a prior year that they can use or apply to keep those programs going, even if we're in a shutdown scenario. So there's not a one-size-fits-all definition to how things will be affected. If we get to a situation next week where we look like we're going to be in this for the long haul, we'll be able to turn fairly quickly, working with state departments and agencies to determine the impact for the immediate term. But in the next couple of days, those services that I mentioned a moment ago, those core services will continue. One of the things that will or could be different this time is one of the first things that people saw in past shutdowns were that the national parks closed.
Right.
Now, as of this morning, the reporting that we're hearing is that the administration in Washington is working to try to see if they can make, in their words, public land as accessible as possible, which would mean keeping parks open for things like hiking or cross-country skiing without a lot of the regular personnel or the concessionaires. So that may be a little bit different. That adds its own layers of issues in terms of safety and liability that's a discussion for another time. But that's the one other effect that people may see. If they're planning to take a weekend visit to a national park or early next week, or if they're planning to take a trip to, say, the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., there may be some disruption in services that they would expect to normally receive.
Yes. I've been curious if that's been rather confusing, because trying to keep them as accessible as possible isn't necessarily a clear direction at this point. So I assume you're waiting for more from the Interior Department.
Right. And again, that's another one of the fluid issues that continues to be a work in progress as we go through this. The somewhat interesting and ironic thing is that it wasn't that long ago, Mina, that California was viewed as the kind of ground zero for budget dysfunction. It was an unfortunate rite of passage in the summer that we would get into these knockdown, drag-out budget fights in Sacramento that would drag through the summer and into the fall, the last long one we had in 2010,
in
October, and almost to Halloween. That's fortunately very much in the rearview mirror. For each of the last 7 years, we've been able to adopt on-time balanced budgets in Sacramento and keep things, going in a relatively seamless manner here. So the shoe's kind of on the other foot in terms of California and being a model for Washington in terms of how to get things done on time and keep the governments operating and functioning.
Yes, though, interestingly, in the federal government is not a divided government. We've got a bunch of calls coming in, so I'm going to go straight to them if I could. Alberta in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Alberta.
Hi, hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Okay, I have heard the Republicans say that this is a specific Democratic issue, The House has said this. I disagree. It is really a Republican issue. The House, or the Senate rather, had a bipartisan issue that McConnell has refused to take to the vote because he doesn't know how the president was going to vote, quote unquote. He needs to bring this to a vote and let the president either sign it or not sign it and prove himself the kind of person he is. This is a humanitarian issue, and to make all of these encumberments on these 700,000 people's lives is ridiculous.
Well, Alberta, thanks for registering that opinion. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to go quickly next to Dave in Dublin. Hi, Dave.
Hi. So I just wanted to say, with all due respect to John Bresnahan, he kept repeating this idea that it would be on the Senate Democrats if the vote was not passed. But as, from my understanding, there are 5 Senate Republicans that have come out against the CR as well. So, I mean, they don't even have simple majority support for passing this CR. So how could that be entirely on the Senate Democrats?
Yes, he did say that, though. At the same time, I think he kind of couched his words in the word typically the party that is voting against the bill would be blamed. But it sounded like there were some caveats to that. What do you think, Molly Reynolds?
So I think this is an important dimension for what's been happening and what is likely to happen over the next day, week, et cetera, which is that if Leader McConnell has the support of all of his own Republican members, Dave is right that there are some Republican senators who have said that they will not vote for this current House proposal. If McConnell doesn't have unified support of his own conference, it becomes easier for Democrats to stand unified in opposition and to try to use some leverage to get things that they want. If, on the other hand, McConnell is able to bring all 50 of his members who are in Washington and expected to vote, Senator McCain is not in Washington, is not expected to participate. So if McConnell has party unity, then it's more politically difficult for Minority Leader Schumer to definitely keep all of the Democrats to the extent that he can opposed to a deal going forward.
Well, Pam writes, people keep saying that CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, expired at the end of September. It expired, but Republican leadership refused to bring it up for a vote in either House of Congress, where it surely would have passed. Republicans are the ones who held it hostage. What do you think about that? I mean, right now, the argument on the Republican side is that Democrats are voting against extending children's health coverage and they are hurting the military. I mean, do you think that has sway, or do you think, you know, reactions like this listener's will prevail?
So the listener is right that CHIP expired at the end of September, and that if Republicans in Congress had wanted to, they could have brought up a CHIP reauthorization bill between then and now that likely would have passed with bipartisan support. There was some disagreement in the fall over the structure of the House's CHIP reauthorization bill. There were some things in it, particularly things in it to pay for extending CHIP coverage that Democrats did not like. So I'm not quite sure what would have happened had that come to the floor. But it is clear that a central piece of Republican strategy here in January has been to try to use this CHIP reauthorization to get some Democrats to vote for this 4-week stopgap spending bill. Yes. At the beginning of the week, I was optimistic that that would work.
Yes.
I thought that would bring some Democrats on board. And one thing that has been interesting to me to watch over the course of the week is the degree to which that hasn't been quite as successful as I was expecting.
Well,
Nina, if I could,
H.D. Palmer, please.
One second. One of the things when Congress passed their last short-term spending bill, we're losing track of them back in December, is Congress did reauthorize the CHIP program, to Pam's question, for a 3-month period. This is a program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, that provides health care to low-income children in California. About 1.3 million are enrolled right now. That program has been reauthorized through the month of March. So there should not be any interruption or interference in the services because of that short-term reauthorization that Congress has already approved. As Molly knows, the debate going on right now is that the bill that passed the House, the short-term bill that passed the House last night, has a six-year reauthorization for this program rather than the 3 months through March. So the question then becomes, you know, if we don't get an agreement on this, and again, we get into a protracted issue and heaven forbid we this drags out through March, then what happens after that? Is it reauthorized, or are states going to be on the hook to pick up a larger share of costs?
Yes. Well, actually,
for administering that program? And so those are determinations that we're looking at, and we're going to have to make a determination on if, again, and we hope that we don't get to this point, we're in a situation come March where we're looking at a situation where this program is not reauthorized by that time.
Well, that is a question that our listener Karen in Berkeley has called in with. Karen, does what H.D. Palmer just said answer your question about the effect of a lack of CHIP funding?
Absolutely not. The reauthorization does go through March. The Congress now has asked to pass the CHIP, but they are closing, and this isn't brought up ever, they are closing several of the clinics that right and left, these clinics are being closed, so the people who use CHIP will not be able to go to the clinics. So that's a big point, and people are being used as pawns. The CHIP is being used as a pawn, and the Dreamers are being used as a pawn. So the family, the Congress that says they're the Congress of a family is not true.
Well, Karen, thanks for that point. I want to quickly try to get Neil in here from San Francisco. Hi, Neil.
Hi. So following up on the last caller's comment about McConnell not bringing what I'll call the bipartisan Durbin, Graham, immigration package to the floor is why don't the Democrats agree to not procedurally block a vote on the CR if simultaneously the Republicans bring to the floor a vote on that quote-unquote bipartisan DACA/immigration bill? And at least that's intellectually honest in terms of letting everyone vote, and it would put everyone, including the president, on record on which parts of everything, CHIP, DACA, immigration, funding, they actually vote against.
So, Molly Reynolds, we have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, so I think one challenge with a strategy like that is that we don't actually have that much time left. We have just until midnight tonight, and so it would be difficult, I think, to pull off something that requires, multiple votes. And the other thing I'd say is I think that it's not clear what would happen to Durbin Graham in the House. And so I think folks are really pushing for some sort of deal that has some potential to pass both chambers. And so I think that's one of the major sticking points.
And in the meantime, lest we forget, Congress has a bunch of other must-pass bills coming up. Right, Molly Reynolds?
Yes, this is not the last big showdown that we'll see in Congress this year.
Molly Reynolds, fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, thanks for talking with us. And thanks
for having me.
Sure, and thanks also to H.D. Palmer of the California Department of Finance. We've got a half hour on the Women's March coming up. Stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.